It is 6 o'clock. I will call us to order and ask that we stand, and those who wish to join in participate in saying the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
If you haven't already, please make sure that you're logged in. I had said it earlier, that's why I he was sick for the committee meeting. He was sick for committee meeting. Oh, no, Jim Burns was. Yeah, no. First agenda item is to resolve our policy planning meeting for September, and we are still waiting for a couple folks to log in. Anyone in particular that you'd like me to? We have 30 members present. Thank you all for logging in. September policy planning meeting would normally fall on Labor Day, I think. So we are looking for an alternate date for that meeting. I'm throwing out the possibility of Monday, September 12th, which would be the following Monday. Happens to be the Monday of regular county board meeting week because of how September's calendar is. Anybody have strong feelings about that one way or the other? Thumbs up. I'm getting thumbs up from the back of the room. September 12th, anybody not able to do that or feel strongly about us not having it on the 12th of September? I'm seeing none of that. There might be a couple people who can't make it because of that change in date. So let us move then our September policy planning meeting to September 12th instead of having it on Labor Day. Are there any supervisor conference reports? Supervisor Benrud.
Thank you. A week ago today, I was in Madison for the day, and I met with the Secretary of Transportation, Mark Gottlieb. We had a very, very good meeting, and we're going to be working together with the DOT, which is awesome, and we've never really had a meeting with the Secretary. Also, I had a meeting with Mike Hipsch, but he said it'd take me 20 minutes to get there. Well, by the time I went through all the construction and everything else, I was an hour and a half late. So he had another meeting, and I said, I'll catch him on the rebounds. I'm going home. Thank you.
Any other supervisor reports? Jerry, can you give us an update on the picnic, please?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Everybody should have a yellow copy on their desk. It pretty much states everything that we have planned. We'd like to, our main focus is to get everybody to come this year and to stay. In the past, people used to come, vendors used to come, and they used to contribute. There would be card games going late until the evening, and lately, I don't know why, but now it's just pretty much everybody come to the picnic and they're gone with an hour and 2 o'clock, everybody's gone. Our focus is to get everybody to stay, play cards, bocce ball, horseshoes, cards, and just socialize if you can. And it's a time that we get together once a year in a non-formal setting, and let's just all come and have a good time. We put together a good, what we think is a very good menu this year. Everywhere we go, as everybody knows, the 10 state conventions and parties and that, the first question is asked is what kind of chicken we're having. This year, as in last year's, our goal is to have anything but chicken. So last year we had the hamburger steaks. This year we're having the pork loin stuffed with Italian sausage mozzarella. And I think we put together a pretty good menu for the price. And as an added incentive for everybody to stay, we're going to have live music with Dave Kurska. I don't know how many of you have seen or heard Dave Kurska, but he's excellent. He plays variety. He'll play anything you want. And we're going to have boat tours of Lake Neshonic it could probably be a good time if you go on the tour to ask questions if you don't understand some of the problems we've had in the past on who owns what and what is what out there. It'd be a good time to ask questions, and you can visualize it, give you a better understanding of that. And that concludes my report, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Supervisor Sobranek. So it's a working lunch, then, if we go on the boat tour to learn about
Not
Lake
necessarily,
Neshonet.
But if you have any questions or nothing you understand, we could answer that at that time.
Thank you. And thank you very much. Oh, Supervisor Benrod, go ahead.
I guess I'd like to thank Ray Ebert, because he's the one that got this together for us. And Jim Light is going to be the one that has his pontoon boat. And Ray is not going to be here. He's going to be out of town. But anyway, thank you, Ray. Thank you.
And thank you also to Supervisor Sobranek and Supervisor Benrod for all the work that you've put into it in advance. We know it's going to be a great picnic, so we hope as many of you as possible are able to make it. Thank you for your planning efforts. Any other last call for supervisor conference reports? If not, Mr. O'Malley, administrator's report.
We have a proclamation. August is County Aging Month, whereas the County Aging Unit provides information assistance to all county senior residents, and whereas good nutrition is important to the community as an insured through two dining programs, and whereas home-delivered meals provide an opportunity for a low-cost first intervention to allow residents to remain living independently in their own homes, and whereas quality of life of aging residents is insured through transportation programs, caregiver support, organized activities, as well as assistance in filing forms and applying for benefits, and whereas all staff of La Crosse County Aging Department work together to provide a healthy and safe environment in the aging community. Now, therefore, be it resolved, the La Crosse County Board does hereby proclaim the month of August as Aging Month, urges all residents to join in recognizing the valuable contribution of persons dedicated to ensuring that the aging residents of La Crosse have the opportunity to live a healthy and productive life.
Moved by Supervisor Cotter, seconded by Supervisor Hampson. Discussion? Supervisor Hampson.
I wanted to second this because I turned 60 in August, and I thought it was just fitting that we declare it County Aging Month. Thank you.
You did, or you will? On Saturday?
Yes.
In case anybody's interested in celebrating with her. Any other discussion? Eight. That's it. It's the Sharon Hampson Memorial Proclamation now. Any other discussion on this proclamation? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. It is carried unanimously. Thank you. Can you get us back on track, please, Mr. O'Malley?
I'll give it a
onto
try.
The agenda.
Good evening. We've got a couple of presentations for you. They should be quite brief. I don't think it'll be a long meeting, but we wanted to give you an overall viewpoint of some of the challenges that we're dealing with. Jason will actually give you a lot more detail on what his team is putting together related to the human services budget. But I wanted to give you, there's a handout with enough information in it as well. As you'll be able to see, a lot of the challenges are not just about the state budget, but just in general, a whole lot of economic issues that are impacting La Crosse County. Is this advancing or not? Status, obviously departments and finance staff have been doing a great deal of work. In July, the deadline was for all departments to submit their budgets. As you may know, our finance department actually breaks up the responsibility for all the departments. Our key staff people within finance that work with each one of the departments and help guide them and answer questions and really provide a lot of good background. It was a great innovation by our finance director. Administrative decisions and review will actually start this week. It will take all of this month and probably a little bit into next month. We're actually dealing with some new software. We've changed over in that, so it may take us a little longer to actually complete the budget document. We usually try to get that to you in the middle of September. Guaranteed we'll have it to you by the end of September, so you'll actually have that budget document, but we're working through a number of challenges. We continue to do a detailed review of all position vacancies and scrutinize that as part of the management management team. The 2011 full-time equivalently cuts that we put into the 2011 budget are on track. In fact, if you remember, Lakeview had actually designated a position and a number of issues to be met within the calendar year. They've exceeded that by about twice. It would be about 1.3 positions of FTEs that are being eliminated in Lakeview, and going ahead, we'll continue to look at that staffing. We're limiting out-of-state travel. We're scrutinizing any out-of-state travel that happens in the departments. They actually have to go through a management team review on those, so there has to be a legitimate need for that. We look at scrutinizing how many people are actually going to a conference or a seminar and the funding that's involved with that. Human Services review has been ongoing of residential placements and right-sizing of the juvenile detention facility. Obviously, you know that we've jump-started that and not waited for that change, so we're actually implementing that in this calendar year because it will position us, as you'll hear more, for the 2012 budget. We continue to preserve reserves as much as possible, including interest stabilization. You'll notice that that's going to be one of the key items that we talk about, because that's, again, one of the ongoing challenges for our budget. In good times, when you invest your reserves and you get a good, healthy return on your investments, that helps to control property taxes each year. Obviously, our interest revenue is down, and we'll talk more about that. There's no increase anticipated in health and dental premiums this year for the second year in a row, but we may consider other changes in plan design to help control costs and to work with our employees on that. Finally, yet this fall, you will be asked to look at refinancing of the final last part of the 2001 LEC debt. We will not be extending the term. We'll just be taking additional benefits from the low interest rates that are there. We still anticipate that even with the turmoil over the last week or so, that we do expect we'll still get positive rates for that final amount, and that, of course, we'll issue the 2011 short-term highway debt that will continue to be paid for by the highway fund balance. Our debt strategy to level off the GO debt seems on track. If you could flip, I don't know what's happening with the remote control, but it's not. You've seen this slide a number of times, but remember, I just want to remind you of the challenges that really over the next 3 years, 12, 13, and 14, is to level off that debt to be approximately $4 million or less as far as the debt payment goes. We'll continue to do that. We'll show you how we accomplish that using the debt reserves that we have, and the way that we ended up borrowing the funds for the Law Enforcement Center allowed us to actually have some dollars to be able to do that. The challenge will be in 2014 as we're utilizing short-term highway debt, so we'll end up talking about that as well, but I'm confident that we'll be able to meet our goal of leveling that off until you see that big drop, which is in 2015 when we pay off a significant part of the first Law Enforcement Center, and the majority of our debt will be the new Law Enforcement Center. Another item that, please.
Supervisor Sobranek.
Thank you. Mr. Administrator, the blue is the outstanding debt still left on the ORS LEC, is that correct?
Primarily, that's debt from the 1997 Law Enforcement Center, right?
Thank you.
And again, part of the strategy is that we have the ability to refinance a portion of that, not extend the term any, but to get better interest rates, and that will help be part of the leveling strategy to bring that down under the $4 million. For some reason, the remote's not working, Jenny, so I'll just have to keep asking you to do it. I was particularly pleased with this slide that the auditor included. I don't know what's going on with that. And one of the points that I want to make, and it's hard to tell in your handout, but remember that one of our biggest challenges budget-wise is that we do have that large amount of debt for the Law Enforcement Center, and that's why we really need to manage debt as much as possible, do as minimal amount of use of debt over the next several years as we do that. But you should see that there are funding sources for each one of the other pieces of debt other than general property taxes. The largest pie up there, of course, is the solid waste debt. There's a revenue stream that pays for that instead of property taxes. And so, again, that utilizes a taxable form of debt, but that as long as the revenue stream and the solid waste system is as healthy financially as it has been, we do not use property taxes to pay for that. Hillview Terrace, of course, has a revenue stream from the users that are doing that. Pension liability is, of course, within the existing operating levy. The old landfill, of course, will be paid off and does not require any additional financing. The smaller pies down below, the business fund, of course, is paid for through proceeds from the West Salem Business Park. And, of course, highway and road construction is currently utilizing the highway fund balance. So, again, we've got a long-term strategy. I'll spend a little bit more time on that during budget review. There were a couple of questions on the evaluation of the administrator that we spend a little bit more time on debt strategy, because I think it's important that you understand that what we're doing is trying to spread that out over a period of time, delay any additional borrowing until we pay off the law enforcement center. And as you will see, that's easier said than done, because we have many capital needs within the organization, a couple of them that I'll spend some time on tonight. But it ends up being an ongoing challenge to do that when you have to be in a position to actually make two law enforcement center payments has really stretched our ability to utilize debt. But we take it very seriously that we can't be in a position of extending taxes on the public at this time to be able to increase the use of debt. Yeah, let's see. I guess it's not going to cooperate. So, Jenny? The other item that I want to make sure that you're well aware of is that while we spent most of this first 6 months talking about the impact of the state budget on our county budget, you need to recognize that I know many of you do, that there are many more challenges than just the state budget. But let me put all of this into context. I'm anticipating to, over the next 2 years, to bring you operating budgets that hold the entire property tax levy to 0% absolutely. The state, of course, has imposed a 0% levy limit on us. They've given us one little exemption called new construction, that if you have a 1% increase in new construction, you could increase your levy by that amount. They've also provided a moratorium for 2 years on the rate limit. The analysis that Finance Department and I have done so far indicates that based on the changes in equalized value, that we dare not risk the ability to even utilize either one of those options that are allowed under state law. We'll get the equalized value numbers in middle of August. Chuck and I were just talking about that, probably about August 15th. We'll be able to verify what ends up happening. But even providing an absolute zero in operating levy and an absolute zero in debt levy, no adjustments for inflation or anything else, I still expect the tax rate to rise, because the equalized value, which dropped 0.89% this year, I would expect that assessed values and equalized value are going to decline again for the second year in a row. We haven't seen the kinds of impacts some of the counties in the state have, and I have no crystal ball. We'll have those numbers in a couple of weeks. But the projections that we've done is that if equalized value dropped for two more years in a row and we went up by new construction, or we went up by the minimum ability we'd be able to, we would probably be at our rate limit immediately going into the 2014 budget and have to cut before we even start dealing with any other increased expenses. I'll get into more details of that when I bring that to you, but that's why I'm pledging that we will bring you a 0% levy increase again. This will be the third year in a row for operating levy, and I'm expecting we'll have to do that again for 2013 as well. Won't have any choice with that. I do expect stagnant property values to impact the tax rate, so even while we're holding the line for 4 years in a row on operating levy and now for debt levy for 2 years in a row, that the tax rate will rise on property just because of the decline in equalized value. We've identified most of the direct state budget cuts throughout the budget. I've got a slide on that where we've been able to identify some of those impacts. And obviously, the shift of WRS to employees will lower costs in 2012 in most areas, but it will also lower revenue in some others. And we're going through the details and verifying those numbers, and so we'll end up talking about that a bit more. But it's not as simple as it may seem. It's because the majority of our budget is not supported by property taxes. It's supported by fees, charges, other revenue, Medicaid, Medicare, and it makes for a very complex situation, but it will help us meet some of the challenges, particularly in the general fund. Obviously, we're impacted by economics. You probably followed as much as any of the public on what's been happening over the last several days with credit ratings and those types of things, the federal deficit. It will impact our interest. One of the main challenges that that we have is that we utilize interest from our reserves, the investment of our reserves, to help control property taxes. We're expecting preliminarily that we'll probably have close to $400,000 or $500,000 shortfall in the amount of interest that we had expected from this year. Interest rates obviously are very low. We'll end up getting into that analysis when we bring that to you. So while it's good if you're borrowing money to build a house or you're borrowing money for any other purpose, the flip side is it's not helping us in the investment of our reserves, and that has a direct property tax impact because we're always in the position of trying to utilize that to lower our expenses. Obviously, the demand for services don't go down in a bad economy. You've heard talk about that with our income maintenance group, with human services, with the courts. They don't tend to decline, but we still have to provide the same number of services and meet the increase in demand. Probably the one glimmer of bright spot is our sales tax revenue. I'm actually pleasantly surprised. I expect we will hit the sales tax revenue number that we have in our budget. I don't expect a lot of growth in it. We'll obviously tweak that as best we can when we get further through the year. But at this point, with the first 5 months of sales tax revenue, we're having the best year that we've had in recent memory. So again, it's a small sliver of good news. It seems, again, that as a regional center, a regional retail center, our local economy seems to be, again, it's not breaking records by any means, but at least we're not, we are going to meet our sales tax revenue number that's within the budget. There are a whole lot of indirect and other impacts, and while I've spent so much time with you and we've spent time over the last several months talking about the state budget impact, there are a lot of other hidden things that are impacting our ability to deal with and provide services to our community. I'll touch on a few of them, and then Jason will in his presentation as well. Our highway department, obviously their operations and revenues will be significantly impacted by the changes in state law and what we're able to do with other counties, the type of work we're able to do, what work we're able to do with federal funding. But in addition to that, a subset that doesn't get discussed much is at the federal level, the fact that people are getting better mileage with their cars, they're driving less miles because of the economy. Is significantly impacting the amount of gas tax revenue, and the prediction right now is a negative impact to the state of Wisconsin of about $250 million. That means that the state will get that much less in federal gas tax revenue. That will have to impact the amount of revenue that counties, cities, and, of course, the state is able to fund work. That's our prediction right now. Don't know when that will come to pass, how that will impact, but obviously that's going to impact our ability to meet the transportation needs within our community as well as across the state. We'll end up talking more about what options we have within the highway department and how we address the long-term capital needs of our road system. There's a question out there, Madam Chair.
Supervisor Wood.
Thank you. Just a question about our ability to set the fee for the state work we do. Do they just tell us what they're going to pay us, or do we say this is what it costs?
It's more complicated than that. It's actually based on reimbursement and the both the labor rates and the machinery rates that are actually set by the state. Ron, do you want to comment on that rather than have me talk all the time?
Come up to the microphone, please, Ron. Thanks.
The machinery rates are set by the DOT. We don't have a choice on that one way or the other. That's part of the contract we sign with them. The labor rates are currently set by union contract with the benefits and everything, so that's where that is. And materials, we're at the mercy of the private sector, however they look at the material costs.
So then it's never, we never make money at it. It's just enough to cover our costs?
The whole premise behind a county doing work for the state or any other municipality is a break-even idea. We're not set up to make profits. We're not a business per se as a true business is.
In addition to that, just this afternoon at Public Works, we approved the salt bid contract, which is about 7% over what it was the previous year. Again, you know, and I'll show you in an additional slide, that we're being cut by the state in revenue. So in addition to that, being able to purchase the salt will be more challenging this year. Let's all hope for a warm winter and not needing a lot of salt. So again, there are several additional highway department challenges, but I want you to know that not all of them are state budget related. They're related to the economy, the demand for services, as well as the overall economics around the cost of oil, the cost of materials, and the cost of salt. Obviously, we've dedicated and opened our new law enforcement center addition in September or October. We will bring the sheriff in and ask him to give you an update and report on how the new law enforcement center is working and the relationship between the departments. The difficult challenge, though, is that the mental health and medical needs in the jail continue to escalate, and that the types of clients that we're dealing with and that our staff are dealing with are putting increased challenges on just the staffing that they currently have. So it's going to be an ongoing challenge for us in the jail, and I don't want to steal his thunder. He'll talk a little bit more about some of the mental health challenges and the medical needs of the clients that are coming in through the jail, and I know you're interested in that, but recognize that that's putting increased pressure because there is no way to pay for additional staff in the type of environment that we're talking about, and it's really challenging our jailers and our mental health counselors and those folks with a more needy population than we've seen even before the opening of the new law enforcement center. I believe there's a hand there.
Supervisor Mettinger.
And maybe it's more of a question for Corporation Counsel. On the road issues and on the mental health issues and probably other issues, there's a legal liability if you don't maintain the roads, even though it's raining, freezing rain, and price of salt went up, and there's a legal liability if you don't provide for the mental health needs of inmates. I mean, you don't have a choice on those things, do you?
No,
although for discretionary spending, I mean, you're going to have immunity for discretionary decisions. So, but ultimately, you're responsible for providing for the needs of the mentally ill, developmentally disabled in your community. So, you know, and that doesn't go away. Same with the roads.
Well, and a lot of it is really going to cause counties, because of the changes that the legislature made, to really debate whether or not we belong in the business of maintaining state roads, whether or not we can afford to do that, and whether or not that's something we just concentrate on the county roads and local roads that we do, and other states, for example, don't have counties do roads; they have their own staff, and they do that. That hasn't been the tradition in Wisconsin, but. Again, it's going to put a lot of pressure on us to rethink our mission and what we're doing and the adequacy of revenue to do that job. The next item that I want to touch on, of course, is the whole uncertainty about what exactly is happening with the federal budget. Obviously, the impacts can be significant to us. I was just informed by our Hillview administrator today that they've identified a Medicare rate cut of 11% to our that will impact our Hillview nursing home. If we're not able to gain a reprieve or to renegotiate exactly what will happen with that, that could be as much as a couple hundred thousand dollars in cut to Hillview next year. So that's a big impact. We just learned of that today, so we don't have all the details on that. But again, it's an item that had not been identified before and was not by the state government. It's by the federal change. Obviously, Medicaid changes continue to be a big impact. We keep getting
hands here. Supervisor Geary.
You failed to mention, when you're talking about roads and a few other issues, do we get indirect costs?
We charge indirect costs back, especially where federal revenue will generate that.
So in a way, even though we don't make money, we're covering some costs we wouldn't normally cover. If we got out of providing the service, we'd have to have a pretty massive staff reduction to offset it.
Well, if we didn't have to provide the services to other departments, we wouldn't need as much internal service. So if you didn't have a highway department, certainly you wouldn't generate that, but you wouldn't have the same level of staffing in finance or personnel if you didn't have a highway department. Remember, indirect costs are directly tied to getting revenue to pay for the service that's provided. Cool. It's not just a matter of covering some other cost. It's you need to justify and show the level of service to those service departments, or you wouldn't get reimbursed for that.
Well, when Human Services moved out, we lost, 75 people?
You mean the care management organization?
Right. Was it about 75 or was it more?
Sure, and it was actually 140, and we 140 full-time equivalent, and but again, we didn't increase staffing to absorb that service either. When we did staff up, when we did provide that service to CMO.
No, but when they moved out, we didn't reduce anybody in finance or personnel, did
no.
we?
No, and when they grew from a couple of employees to a staff of 140, we didn't increase staffing within our internal service departments
well,
either.
Yeah, well, we can argue, but 20 years ago or 30 years ago, we didn't have it computerized either.
Yeah, I'm only talking the last 10 years. We did not increase staff during that period of time to provide that level of support. We absorbed it with an existing staff and then utilized the revenue to help offset tax levy, which is always our goal, which is to offset tax levy wherever possible. The next bullet point I wanted to talk about, and I'll spend quite a bit of time on this, are the challenges at Lakeview continue, particularly in major capital expenditures that and decisions that the next county board will need to make, but we'll need to set the stage for some of those items, and the ongoing issues of Western Wisconsin Cares, the organization that Ralph was just talking about, in how they place clients at Lakeview, but the state, in their infinite wisdom, has not decided to pay the per diem charge for La Crosse County Western Wisconsin Cares members, and I'll spend quite a bit of time on that. It's really putting a financial challenge on our ability to operate the Mississippi Valley Health Services and to really get direct reimbursement, and I'll talk about that in a moment. Finally, our really unknown items that will have ripple effects throughout our budget. Jason, again, will talk a little bit more about this, but the state medical assistance or Medicaid reduction, they're anticipating a $500 million cut within, I believe it's the year or the biennium, per year during the biennium? The entire biennium, $500 million, and it's not clear where the secretary is going to make those cuts. So any agency or entity within the state that receives Medicaid is at risk of what that impact will be and what that cut will be. My understanding, and Jason will talk more about that, is there are a number of program areas within the human services budget that can be impacted by that. Obviously, there's a lot of debate about the cap on family care. You will see communication from administrators and execs and human services directors across the state challenging and asking that the federal administration not approve the waiver that would put a cap on family care. A couple of congressional people have weighed in on that issue. What the result of that will be on the waiver is yet to be determined, but that will end up impacting services through our organization, both in Human Services, Hillview, and Lakeview. And finally, regionalizing of income maintenance. While we got a lot of changes through in the state budget about regionalizing of income maintenance, there are still so many details to work through, and Jason will talk about that. Can I have the next slide, please? I included this pie chart just to remind you that, again, the complexity of a county budget is not as simple as just saying you cut one place and how else it impacts. Again, only 22% of our entire budget, and we're one of the lowest in the state if you put the same pie chart up in other places. We're less reliant on property taxes than many others. I know that in the past we've talked about that other sliver called fees and charges, and I wanted to give you a little bit more detail on that because we haven't become overly reliant on fees and charges. It's actually how we categorize that, and I've included a detail in the next slide if you can. And this is included as a much bigger page if you want to do that. What I recognize, in fact, Don Bina and I were talking in the hall one day about this, and I thought it'd be important as we get into budget that you get a little bit more detail. You recall that we give you out a green sheet that looks like this that really summarized all the fees and charges changes each year. You obviously get that full catalog, and I think sometimes we almost give you too much information because, you know, with all those separate line items, we thought that the summary would actually help you zero in on what we were actually raising in user fees and charges, and maybe we should come up with a different name. It's really fees, and it's not always user fees, and Don and I had that conversation. So I took the green sheet, and then I sorted it. It's the exact same information, but sorted it by those that we lost money on, in other words, that we had to increase the expenses because we weren't making as much money. So, for example, in Human Services, Family and Children for 2011, we didn't make as much money as we hoped, so we had to change the budget. In this case, because of the reduction of JDF, the Juvenile Detention Facility, by other counties. So we didn't see a gain in total revenue. We actually saw a loss of revenue. You see the bottom line number was $900,000. I know Don had brought this up, that we raised fees by $1 million. But let me walk through and show you the largest numbers, because they're not on what you would think of as a user fee, like for a septic system or a building permit or a health department inspection. So if you go to the bottom, you'll see that the largest increase that we projected in the 2011 budget was $400,000, which is in Human Services clinical, specifically for the operation of the care center. The hope was, and you'll end up seeing some of this in Jason's presentation, the hope was that we would, through Medicaid, charges to insurance companies, that we would be able to generate that. Again, it's tied into the operation of the care center, but that wasn't a new charge to one of Don's neighbors. It's somebody that utilizes the care center, and again, that's a large, that's the largest increase within, quotes, user fees within that schedule. If you keep working your way up, Mississippi Valley Health Services is a projection in both the increase in rate that we charge other counties for using Lakeview Nursing Home through the Mississippi Valley Health Services, as well as in their utilization. So again, I'm going to talk a little bit about the complexity of that, but recognize that that is not an increased user fee to a La Crosse County citizen. It's trying to get the other counties to pay their share, and one of the challenges, of course, is we want Western Wisconsin Cares to pay for their clients as well. So again, it's in the rate that we charge other people for the gap in Medicaid assistance. Facilities and parks, obviously, each year we look at that, but the probation and parole rent was something that we'd worked on for years to negotiate, that when probation and parole moved into our building, they would end up paying rent. Again, that's not a new charge to a local taxpayer or citizen. That's where the state is paying us rent, and quite frankly, that $144,000 offset the entire increase in utility costs for operating the new facility. So it helped to lower or control property taxes in that way, but again, that's not a user fee. It's certainly a fee, it's a rent, but it's not something charged to an individual member of the public. All of their client fees, of course, are charges directly to people that utilize service. Interest on taxes is based on existing policy and practice. Some people are not paying their property taxes as quickly. They incur interest on that. By lowering that, you would actually be giving an incentive for people not to pay their property taxes, and those people that are able to pay on time obviously make sure that they don't incur that interest. That's based on volume. That's not based on changing the rate that someone pays. So again, that's not a new user fee. Jail Board of Prisoners, again, is the next number up there. $50,000 from the state. They pay us a small amount for probation and parole clients that are housed in our jail, and then $15,000 when it happens with cities. And a number of, I'm not going to walk through each one of those, but I wanted to point out that the top, roughly three-quarters of the entire $900,000 is actually directly to what I would think people would expect, that we'd like probation and parole to pay for their rent, we'd like other counties to pay for their clients when they're housed at Lakeview, and of course, we want to be able to maximize outside revenue as much as possible for the care center. And I just thought it was important that Don and I spent about 20-30 minutes talking about this. We haven't changed, for example, fees on building permits for several years in a row. That's included in the calendar of the budget book. I don't know if you have a full budget book with. But just to remind you, as we get into the budget year, if you've got questions about any particular fee or you're just wondering, at the back of the book is that actual whole green example, which shows you when any fee changed. So, for example, if you're concerned you're on planning, resources, and development, look at those fees. We haven't changed most of those, and most of these are actually places that we believe we can maximize that other revenue, and it's actually helped us.
Supervisor Bina.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I kind of set a new policy for myself. If I get a call, and the call was for foot care, your fee went up a little bit in foot care to $38 or something, and this woman was madder than heck. Well, my new policy is, when I get hell, I'm going to give the telephone number of the department head to the person.
Sounds good.
So they can call.
Sure.
So that you don't have to depend on all of my complaining all the time. You're going to get it directly to the department head. So Jason, you're next on the list.
Yeah.
That would be Doug Mormon.
That would be Doug Mormon for that. But I think it was important that I wanted you to have the numbers actually in order rather than all mixed in here, because I think the impression was that we raised $900,000 of new fees based on hundreds of thousands of foot care changes, which we don't do enough foot care to be able to make up $900,000. So it's
there's a lot of other fees going up.
Right, but very, very minimal on the types of things that you're talking about. So I thought that was important to point out as we get into the new budget cycle. Next slide, please. Most of these items we've talked about, but I want to update you on these, and then I'll conclude with the Lakeview challenges, which are a little bit more detailed. The shared revenue number you've seen before, general transportation aids, court aids will be about $47,000. Child support, instead of $71,000, the state agency has identified a way of leveling that through three calendar years, so it's going to be $52,000, so the cut's going to be spread over 3 years, and we're expecting at least within 2012 we can cover part of that from a carry forward of unexpected revenues in 2011 that is a little bit over budget, as well as pursuing a federal incentive. So we think we may be able to balance out most of that without impacting directly our federal revenue, which, if you remember, the challenge was a dollar of state revenue cut also results in $2 of federal revenue. So we haven't got the details finalized. The state agency is working with child support departments on that. So we think we've got a potential solution there, although we haven't finalized that budget. At this point, other than the Medicare that I just learned about today, we have no new cuts to nursing homes. There are no new cuts or transfers of expenses to solid waste. You'll recall under the previous administration, we had some huge increases in fees and that type of thing. So again, the strategies that Hank has been able to work with in leveling off and controlling solid waste fees, as well as using incentives to attract the local haulers to utilize our system, I think we've seen a lot of benefit there, and we'll continue to see that benefit. The most complex impacts that I've been able to identify so far are in human services, which will be covered by Jason, and of course I just touched on that the shift of the WRS cost to employees will mainly help in the general fund, which is not the largest portion of our budget. It will also impact some of the other departments without much help in revenues. The last several slides that I want to talk about.
Supervisor Spiker.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Pardon the interruption.
On a Wisconsin Retirement Fund, 2010 was raised 0.6, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Then 0.7. Have you got the figures, or are they available for 2012?
For 2012, it's going to go from 11.6 to 11.8 total. And so that would be, we were actually preliminary budgeting for 12, but we just heard that it'll probably be closer to 11.8.
How much increase is that on the levy then?
Don't have that number for you, but we'll have
mean,
that when it comes
it's
back.
It's $400,000 or $500,000. It's quite.
It
significant
could be significant.
Even.
Yeah,
right.
But again, half of that will be paid for by employees. So
will it be half, or will it be 5.8?
It'll be 50%.
50%.
The union contract that we did used the language from the state budget that was being debated at that time. It's 50% for all except for protective service.
Okay, thank
so
you.
It's not tied to a percentage. It's tied to that 50. Or I mean, it's not counted. It's not 5.8% as a number. It's half of whatever the total contribution is. So we followed that language.
Supervisor Billings.
I'm wondering about the 10% cut in court aids. I haven't heard as much about that one.
Yeah.
Can
Jenny, could you back up just in
more?
Case there are other questions? I didn't mean to jump ahead. There was a 10% cut in court aids the clerk of courts has been informed of. We're hoping to offset part of that with some of the change in public defender cases, because we should be able to reduce how much the county is spending on court-appointed attorneys, although that only happened July 1st, so it's yet to get a real handle on what that will mean for us in 2012. But, yeah, it's projected at about $47,000. Yeah, we haven't spent a lot of time talking about that. Any other questions on this slide? the Lakeview challenges really come back to, as you know, Medicaid is inadequate in paying for the cost of clients cared for it at Lakeview. That's why we spent all the years we've spent to put together the Mississippi Valley Health Services multi-county collaboration. But in addition to that, we have an aging building. We've postponed for many years what we do with that, particularly because of the law enforcement center. We knew that there was not an appetite for a community to deal with such major increases in expenses, adding a law enforcement center addition, while at the same time considering a major expense like replacing or remodeling the Lakeview Healthcare Center. We did a detailed study. Jim Spropoulos led that effort with Vantage Architects and identified in 2008 that roughly $9.5 million would be necessary for remodeling and upgrading the heating systems and everything, all the mechanical systems and the entire building at Lakeview. That's actually easier said than done. First of all, that's a 2008 number, so we would expect there would be some inflation in building costs, as well as materials in particular. If you've ever lived through a home remodeling, as our clients and our residents would have to do, it would not be easy to remodel $9.5 million while you have an operating nursing home and multiple other services that are there. So that would be a unique challenge. Secondly, obviously, is with anyone, you would look at whether or not to build a replacement structure. That's obviously more expensive than remodeling, which would be very expensive. Or there's concepts of replacing with multiple smaller structures. Either of those would be easier on the staff and the clients that we serve, but potentially more expensive. The difficult part is identifying what portion of the reimbursement structure within Medicaid, within the state reimbursement system, would pay for which portions of those. We're meeting later on this month with representatives of the State Nursing Home Association trying to identify that, because the good news is that a portion of this would not have to be paid for by local property taxes. It would be paid within the reimbursement structure. I don't have good answers yet for that, but don't kid yourself. I'm not don't want to mislead you. There will be a property tax impact within our debt structure to be able to answer any one of these things. It will be an ongoing capital investment if you choose to do this. The alternatives to staying in the nursing home business are not pretty. They're far more expensive. So, again, it continues to be an ongoing challenge that the new county board will end up having to make some decisions into the future. The viability of the multi-county collaboration, Mississippi Valley Health Services, is in jeopardy, however, due to unforeseen overuse by Western Wisconsin Cares. You may recall that when we went through all the legal issues, got special legislation to be able to charge a per diem rate to other counties for their use of Lakeview Nursing Home, that one of the issues that the State Department of Health Services did was to approve that per diem rate for managed care organizations, Western Wisconsin Cares or others, for placement, but not if they are members of Western Wisconsin Cares and La Crosse County residents. And they wouldn't let us put a moratorium on that, which would have capped our costs. So if we let any family care client come to Lakeview and receive the per diem, we have to let all, including those from La Crosse County. At the time that that we had that discussion and disagreement with the previous administration, it was only 11 clients. Now it's grown to 28, and I'm going to talk about the financial impact of that. Again, could you go to the next slide? Included in your packet are some of the details of this, and I'm going to apologize because I didn't want to make colored slides and go through all this. There are some of the detailed numbers actually in the last slide that I just made a copy of, so if you want to read along. At the top shows that just within the last 12 months, you end up seeing what the four categories of clients in the nursing home and facility for developmentally disabled, the FDD. The total is that in July of 2010, La Crosse County clients placed by our Human Services Department that are case managed or at least have responsibility through Human Services was 63. La Crosse County Western Wisconsin Cares clients had grown to 13 the first month after the moratorium. Other managed care organizations were at 4, and other MVHS counties other than La Crosse County was at 57. Now, once you start requiring people to pay a per diem and they actually have to manage that budget, you end up providing incentive for people to really do everything they can to provide other incentives for clients to not be placed whenever there's a possibility at a more expensive care. And what's happened over that period of time is La Crosse County Human Services has been able to manage the clients and see a reduction down to 54. They're managing a budget that we've provided them. They're doing the best they can. So it's about a 14% decline in the total number of clients. Other MCO have actually utilized us a little bit more. You've seen a slight increase by three clients, which is a 75% increase, but it's only three individual people. Other MVHS counties, particularly Juneau, Monroe, and I believe it's Vernon, are actually seeing a reduction and trying to reduce the number of clients. So you've seen a 21% increase. Meanwhile, La Crosse County Western Wisconsin Cares has gone from 13 to 28. A growth of 115%. So the total number of clients, the total census, has only declined by about 2% from 137 clients at this snapshot in 2010 in July to just last month of 134. But what's actually happening is it's shifting the reliance of who's actually paying for the clients back to La Crosse County because Western Wisconsin Cares and the state are not providing that. So you end up seeing the bar graph. You see the blue represents July 2010. The red represents July 2011. You see La Crosse trying to only utilize Lakeview as the placement of last resort. You see managed care actually relying more on Lakeview than they had in the past, and other Mississippi Valley Health Services counties also trying to reduce their reliance on Lakeview. If we can go to the next slide. Obviously, what that's doing then is shifting the percentage of clients that are there. A pie chart kind of illustrates that we're becoming more and more reliant. We're only 9% reliant on Western Wisconsin Cares clients that were La Crosse County members at the time that we ended the moratorium on more MCO clients coming in. Now we're at 21%. And if you go to the next slide, this is where it gets a little bit scary. This overstates it a little bit because it assumes that the census is stagnant for an entire year, but it illustrates the point. It probably won't be as rapid as this. I've got to do a more complicated analysis along with Lakeview staff, but if it were to happen by year end at this growth rate, La Crosse would be down to 50 clients in 2011 at the end of the year. La Crosse Western Wisconsin Cares would be up to 36 clients. Other MCO would be at 9, and MVHS would be at 39. And you follow that trend for just the next 2 years. Within the first couple of months of 2013, we would be majority serving MCO and Western Wisconsin Cares clients and not MVHS members. So it's really putting, again, I don't expect it to be this rapid, but that's the trend line over just the last 12 months. Madam Chair, there's a
Supervisor
question.
Flood.
Can you state that, I mean, positively state that this is going to be the trend, or could it be just an anomaly that this year they had many, many clients that needed to be placed?
I'd like to not lay awake at night worrying about things like this, but the trend has just been too strong in a period of 12 months to more than double. And in fact, just a month before the moratorium, we were only at 11 Western Wisconsin Cares La Crosse clients. And you know, the philosophy of managed care is to place a client in the least restrictive. In fact, the debate is whether or not, quotes, you need nursing homes anymore. I remember having that discussion with previous managers at Western Wisconsin Cares when they used to work for us and were part of our county operation. And it's interesting that once the moratorium was lifted, they keep finding clients that need our level of service. Lakeview is a needed service. It needs to be there for a certain type of client, but we can't be in a position as the county to offset the costs that the state should be paying for within family care. If you go back just one...
let me just check. Did that answer your question, Supervisor Flood?
And just in particular, I just wanted to zero in on, again, we had 13 clients July of 2010. July of 2011, it's at 28. At that rate, even if it just levels off, it's still shifting a whole lot of cost to La Crosse County that the state is not paying for.
Mr. O'Malley, Supervisor Billings has a question.
Sure.
I'm wondering if you've taken into account the effects of caps on family care.
This analysis does not include the potential impact of that. And the caps on family care, and Dean can probably speak to this more eloquently, may not impact this at all because the acuity of a client is going to be considered first. So if somebody needs a Lakeview placement, regardless of the cap on family care, they may end up being placed at Lakeview anyway because that's the person that needs the highest level of care as opposed to somebody that needs in-home care might be on a waiting list. Am I right on that?
That's correct.
That's our understanding.
Earlier today, yeah. That's correct. Because acuity levels will drive who gets in and out of family care.
Well, and I'm also wondering as enrollment, as the counties in Western Wisconsin CARES have tried to catch up with enrollment, if that's part of this trend.
It could be.
Year.
I mean, there are so many variables going on. But again, the other MCO includes any of those that are Western Wisconsin CARES members or Southwest Family Care or any of the other member counties that are coming from other managed care organizations from other than La Crosse County. So it's only been a growth of three.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is that all the questions? And then I'll wrap up then if we can go two slides ahead. You again see graphically the kind of impact on each one of those that was done in a line graph, and the last one shows the financial impact. Which is actually in the handout, but it's not up there on the screen. Or is it? Aha, good, it is there. Okay, so I took the first graph, which shows you the change in census. I analyzed just on the $57 a day, which is our current per diem rate, and here's where it really hits the road. La Crosse County has done everything they can on an annualized basis to reduce the amount of money that Human Services is paying to Lakeview. And on an annual basis, it would be a savings of almost $200,000. On an annual basis, La Crosse Western Wisconsin CARES would be costing us an additional $300,000. Other MCO would be generating only $62,000 of additional revenue. Other MVHS counties are actually trying to control their costs. They're keeping it, in this projection, down under $1 million on an annual basis. If those trend lines that I talked about continued and actually happened for the entire year, you can actually see the escalating amount decreasing for La Crosse County Human Services, increasing for La Crosse Human Services to pay for Western Wisconsin CARES clients. Other MCO is really relatively stable, and we'd be less and less reliant on our partners at Mississippi Valley Health Services unless we shift more cost to them by drastically increasing the rate, which obviously would make it even more difficult. So I'll get into that more actually next week when we meet with the Mississippi Valley Health Services Board of Directors and talk about what alternatives we have to try to persuade the state to help make this partnership work. They obviously believe that we are providing good service because they're placing clients with us. I don't think they'd be doing it otherwise, but they are shifting costs to us. And so what I've tried to do in these short slides is to show you that we have a lot of challenges within the 2012 budget. The parameters are set that our tax levy for operating has to be zero, and there aren't a lot of easy ways to pay for all of these challenges that we have, but we're up to the challenge. We have a good team of people, and we're going to bring you a good budget for 2012.
Supervisor Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Steve, I'll go back to the second slide. We talk about preserving reserves, including interest stabilization. And I believe you indicated you thought we would get a cheaper interest rate if we refinanced, or
okay.
What did you say about that?
We're mixing a couple of things. Interest rates in that, could you go back to that part of to the second slide? Just want to make sure that we're talking about the same interest. Interest stabilization is referring to that we took a portion of the general fund reserve and set it aside to help offset for the loss of interest revenue because we're not making as much on our interest investments of our reserve. Because remember, that revenue, when you can make a lot of interest on your reserves, it helps control property taxes. That's different from the final bullet point talking about that refinancing part of the 2001 LEC debt will save us interest payments. So two different uses of the words interest. Saving interest, which is an expense to us by refinancing, means we're paying less interest. The middle bullet point is talking about that we're not making as much interest on our reserves.
Okay, I believe I understand that, but That's what I'm wondering. You're going to refinance, and you think you're going to get a cheaper interest rate?
Right. Then what we sold the debt for in 2001, I don't have the number off the top of my head. It was in the 4.5% to 5% rate, and because we've only got a few years left of that debt, we'll probably get in the neighborhood of 3%, so it'll save us some money.
It's not what's being said nationally, but at all.
Well, on municipal bonds, we're still doing pretty well. Even though the feds were downgraded, we're still pretty stable and an attractive investment, especially for short term. Again, we're not extending the term.
Yeah,
we're
understand.
Just using it for the term that's remaining. And this was the first time. We would have refinanced it last year if we could, but there was a 10-year hold from 2001 to 2011. We probably would have got even a little better interest rate last year, but you can't issue a bond that gets refinanced earlier than the 10-year window.
Go for it.
Okay. Thank you. The next presentation will be Jason that will give you an update in more detail on the human services budget.
And joining me is Dean Rupert, our operations manager, as well. And we wanted to give you a preview of the Human Services 2012 budget outlook as we prepare our budget, since we are a significant portion of the overall county tax levy. And the state budget, as you know, was not particularly kind to Human Services in this cycle and created a lot of challenges for us. And as we've had some of the discussion with you about some of those challenges, like income maintenance, you know, how many clients in this community depend on our services. When we were talking about income maintenance, it was one in six county residents that receive income maintenance benefits that are administered by staff in our department. And then you add on that children that are kept safe in the home that utilize our services, and elderly individuals that are kept in their home because of our ADRC and care managers, that adds to the number of clients in this community depending on human services. In the outlook is for this year, but since we do have the tax levy caps, we're looking at that in a two-year perspective on 2013 as well. And just jumping a little ahead as far as a spoiler alert, we do have significant challenges that we're facing. We don't view them as overwhelming challenges. It does require that more than ever before, we're trying to get ahead of the curve and position ourselves in the best way to absorb what's coming our way and still be able to serve our clients well. And we'll be going into next year with a significant amount of more risk than we've had in previous years, just because although the governor signed the budget, so many of the impacts of that budget are unknown at this point. And there are some significant things like where the MA cuts are going to come from that are yet to be determined, and all of those carry a significant risk. So how we're going to present this, I just wanted to give a very general services overview in terms of the scope of services we're talking about that the Human Services Department provides. And then what comprises the Human Services Department budget in terms of state funds and county levy, and then take a look at the outlook for next year in terms of the state budget impact, those impacts we know about, some impacts that are driving our budget that were unplanned and just standard inflationary adjustments, and the risks that we're facing, so where we're going in the planning phase, so we can advance. Okay, just a little bit of context as well. It's important to understand the services provided by Human Services are by and large mandated services. In a sense, we provide services on behalf of the state of Wisconsin, because in all of these state statutes, we're really required to perform the service. Now, over the years, as budgets have gotten tighter, you'll find that we do have non-mandated services we provide, but by and large, those are services that are designed to keep down costs of the mandated service. So we're making sure we're trying to keep children out of institutions, because it's a really a more appropriate intervention for them, and it saves levy as well. So it's a win-win there. So it's not always the silver bullet to cut non-mandated services. It's a very complex budget. It's a little akin to a Jenga puzzle. If you cut the wrong piece of it, you'll actually increase costs in another area. So you have to be very careful in terms of how you approach cuts in the budget. Okay, first for the overview of the services that are provided by the department, and can hit that again. And our mission, enhancing self-sufficiency, where so we keep clients, whether mental health or elderly, help them self-sufficient in the home, keep people safe. We have five service divisions, and you can hit that again. Family and children's, mental health, chemical health, economic support, and aging and disability resources. And we'll just go through this quickly. In families and children's, those are children who are unsafe due to abuse or neglect, youth that are involved in the criminal system or other delinquent behavior, but also, and what we're trying to put a greater emphasis on, are children and youth that are not yet involved in that behavior, but what can we do in a preventive way to keep youth out of the system, and then children and youth with developmental disabilities or mental health issues. And then we have our mental health and recovery services section that are adults struggling with mental health issues. Our chemical health and justice sanctions, adults involved in the criminal system, being monitored in the community, or those struggling with chemical dependency issues. Economic support, these are individuals and families with insufficient income to meet their basic needs. And our Aging and Disability Resource Center that help adults or families needing information and to be connected to services in the aging, disability, mental health, or substance abuse area. You look, the overall human services budget in 2011 was $33.6 million, but we're heavily reliant on state and federal funding sources. So if you look at the breakdown, you can see about 60% of our overall budget is comprised of state and federal revenue. So how the state budget goes, how the federal budget goes, really impacts our ability to provide services. It's about 40% of the budget then is the county tax levy and others and various fees. But what's interesting to understand, too, when we're looking at preparing a budget for a tax levy, this is the breakdown of the overall budget where you see the largest budget share of overall funding is in children and families, and then it goes mental health, economic support. But if you'd hit that again, we'll see in the blue represents in terms of where the tax levy is. So in some of our service divisions, like economic support, there's really real little tax levy in that service section. It's mainly state and federal funds, as is our Aging and Disability Resource Center. Most of the funds is in children and families, but still there, a heavy amount of state and federal resources. Okay, in terms of when we look at our budget for 2012 and comparing ourselves to our base of 2011, what we're seeing as expected decreases, the first is because of the state reduction in shared revenue, we expect since we're supported by county tax levy, a portion of that will be passed along to human services, and on a percentage basis, our portion of that is approximately $215,000 we'd absorb in the department of that shared revenue decrease. Secondly, we were cut in the state budget for our youth aids, and these are dollars that were actually originally provided by the state as a sound investment, saying if you can use these dollars to keep youth in the community to do services and not send those youth to institutions or corrections, you'll have a better outcome for those youth, and also you'll save dollars at the same time, so we're investing in you. Well, this investment now has gone away, and our youth aids budget is being cut 10%, which seems a little counterproductive, but we need to absorb that impact, so about $150,000 in youth aids cut is impacting our budget. And then we just have a general across-the-board increase in several appropriations that they're relatively minor. They add up to $12,000. and then an increase in the rate for utilization of the juvenile correction facilities, and that we predict will be about a 9,000 impact. But then we wanted to take a look at the offset of that in terms of the employee contributions to the WRS, which was also a state action. And then when you balance that off against what we know will be a 2% wage increase for employees, the net of that is $294,000. So we get some savings to offset some of the cuts. And I believe we have a question.
Supervisor Geary.
On that 2% wage increase, how much was that in dollars? Do we know?
I don't have a separate slide. I've shown you that before, but this breaks it down what the net gain is, even with that for human services. But we can give you more details.
Dean's looking for it, I think.
We can easily give you more details when.
Yeah,
when
if you don't have it tonight, I'm sorry. Just put what the 2% by department was when you bring.
About $184,000.
$184,000.
Yeah, okay. Again, and that's net. That's not gross, because it's not all levy savings. So, and this is one of the more complicated budgets. Mm-hmm.
Supervisor Doyle.
Thank you. Where are we in our human services fund at this point in terms of compared to other years? What percent and so forth? How many dollars?
We've got around $7 million being our fund balance. It's not any higher. It's been dropping a little bit every year because we're using some of it for our Connect product and so on via your approval, but we're about $7 million.
Dean, when you answer the next time, will you make sure to use the mic, please?
Sure.
Because we're not picking up. Thank you.
Okay. So overall, then, when we look at the impact of the state known budget impacts, we have about an $89,000 decrease to our budget. The next set of impacts are unplanned impacts, and the first one on there is a decrease in children's waiver funding. And this is actually the most significant impact to the department in $285,000. And this is something we didn't, or couldn't see coming, really. And it's a bit frustrating. It wasn't a specific legislative change, but this is revenue when children with disabilities and mental health issues, we use federal waiver dollars, and our time spent administering those services and the overhead for that can be charged off against those waiver dollars in a case management rate. The state felt it needed to change the way those were billed to come into compliance with some federal claiming rules, which impacts not only La Crosse County, but it will impact all counties across the state. It is a significant change, not one, unfortunately, we have much of a recourse for, but one that impacts us significantly. So because of that, we'll have to absorb a $285,000 projected decrease in revenue because of what we can no longer claim for work with the children's waiver programs.
Supervisor Ebert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So is part of that $285,000, is that basically for indirect costs that we would provide?
Yes, part of that that we're able to charge back in the waivers is for indirect, so a portion of that is.
But mainly it's internal to your department.
It's both. Right. We have both internal, what we call right. AMSL costs for management of our department, as well as indirect costs that we charge both.
Thank you much.
Right. Okay. And the second impact is the deficit in the care center. And it was alluded to a bit earlier in the fees. We have the care center, which is on Mormon Cooley and is an 8-bed facility that is going into, it's about a year and a half into operation. That provides a crisis stabilization and respite for individuals in mental health crisis. It was really a needed service that filled a gap and very good for a client who would otherwise be heading likely to a hospitalization or an institution. It's a more appropriate setting to get that crisis under control, and it avoids those costly placements. It's cost effective for the department who would otherwise bear some of the costs of those hospital and institutional placements, but also it's a cost effective for the entire community and the hospitals as well that benefit from that service, because it takes MA clients, though those clients could otherwise be in a hospital bed, which is, as you know, MA does not offset the cost of operations. And so you have a client in a hospital bed paying an MA rate and taking up a bed that an insurance client otherwise could have, and the hospital could generate more revenue on that. So in the development of this facility, it would seem as an overall win for the system, and in that way the funding structure was hoped that it would be a shared community cost. This deficit represents two things. One, there was a substantial underperformance in terms of the MA revenue that's being generated by the care center. When we had an RFP and RFP'd this out, our vendor came in with a projection in terms of how much revenue they could generate, and with expertise that they presented in a history of billing in a certain way. It turned out billing could not be done in that way, and as a result, MA revenue has underperformed. Also, because the partnership in terms of financing the facility really didn't come to fruition, it's the department that's really bearing the full cost of the facility. So really what we think, if you look at the entire system, the hospital included, it's a money saver, but when the cost is borne just by one entity, we do have some cost savings, but the cost is greater than just one department's cost savings.
Supervisor Hampson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the main reasons behind setting up the care facility was to cut down on the number of Chapter 51 detentions. So can you give us a ballpark figure on what's happened to those Chapter 51 commitments?
And actually, I wish I had the exact figures with me, and I don't know if Dean recalls the exact figures, but we've had some exciting data that's come out within the last 2 months. Those Chapter 51 commitments have reduced dramatically. That we think is the result of a couple of things. One is the care center. And the second is a result of really good teaming with local area law enforcement that's operating in a much more fluid way.
So it's gone something like from 700 to 300
yes,
per
correct.
Year.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, so that that implies a huge savings in 400 Chapter 51 detentions that are not occurring.
Mm-hmm.
And the hospitals are benefiting from this?
And they are, to an extent, in terms of those individuals then, again, not taking up a hospital bed that's taken up by an insurance, that could otherwise taken up by an insurance client.
And yet when we approach them to help fund this facility, which is financially benefiting them, they absolutely refuse to talk about it. Is that correct?
And they're not warm to the idea, it seems, as a shared financial partnership.
Okay, I thought it was more like they threw you out. But I think this is something that the community has not embraced, and that if the community could shoulder a little more of the burden, we wouldn't be seeing this deficit here.
That is correct.
All right, thank you.
We have a question from Supervisor Sobranek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you give us, in the future, give us a brief synopsis of exactly what this care center does? Do they have beds there? They have walk-ins? How do they service the people? What they do? I have basically really no knowledge of what they do there.
Okay.
I bet you could even get a tour if you asked.
But we'd be very happy to do that. We've had some presentations recently to our Human Services Board on the center, and we'd be glad to share it with the full board. Okay. And then in terms of what you call inflationary contract adjustments, we have multi-year contracts that are tied to the consumer price index. And in terms of where the CPI is trending, it appears those inflationary costs of our contracts will be about $154,000. And then just standard salary and fringe adjustments if individuals that were on single plans projected to pick up family plans or step increases as well for staff moving up their steps, about $13,000. And then all of these are offset by a recent action taken by the board in terms of changes with the juvenile detention center. And that include a reduction of a number of staff in the facility to bring staffing more in line in terms of what we were seeing as a census, and our ability to use that facility for youth that would have otherwise been sent out of county where the county would have been paying that. So we're very appreciative of such fast action on that and being able to get that change in place prior to the start of the calendar year, which means we'll be all set up with our new programming, we hope, if we stay on target, to achieve those savings right away January 1st, and we'll be all adjusted to that, and that's one of the ways we tried to stay one step ahead to position ourselves to gain savings. You really see there what an impact it has. So then of this category, the subtotal there, when you add that, is $182,000 from these categories. In this next section, there are a lot of unknowns here because these are the risks that we're carrying into next year. And Dean's going to talk a little bit about the risks we're facing in these three categories.
And I wish for ourselves, well as you, we could quantify what those unknowns are, but obviously we cannot at this point in time. And Steve mentioned all three of those a little bit in his presentation earlier. But the state MA budget reduction, it's going to be a $500 million reduction over the biennial period, as pointed out. As we know, Jason mentioned earlier, and you've heard before, that about one in six people in La Crosse County are on Medicaid or benefits of one type or another. So that's a lot of impact, and so we're concerned about that because it'll affect eligibility requirements, affect co-pays, cost shares, that kind of thing for the recipients. As well as reimbursement percentages potentially for vendors. So we don't know where that's going to go yet. We just know there's a lot of authority by the Secretary now to implement those changes at will almost. They do not have to receive legislative approval any longer. So that's a big one that we don't know what the impact still will be. We're still waiting for information on that. Imposition of family care caps. We've been here and spoke to you before about the family care caps. Some of you heard about other committees and groups that you're on. We don't know what the impact of that is. We are estimating that about in La Crosse County, at least on average, four individuals per month would go on a wait list, which is 48 per year. Again, we can prioritize those folks based upon approved wait list policies that we've had have approved with the state, as well as access some urgent funding from the state that they made available for family care due to their concerns. I can tell you in the month of July, for the first month, we had seven people on the waiting list, so not a good average start. Before July, and we'll wait and see what happens in future months.
Supervisor Cotter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dean, the first thing that you said is that about one in six of the county residents overall, is that correct?
That's correct.
And then how does that compare with other counties?
Actually, we're about medium, I think, with most other counties, Milwaukee County and some, you know, I think Rock County, where there's depressed economies greater than La Crosse, it's higher than that, but pretty average from some data that at least I've seen to date.
Like places like Eau Claire, Oshkosh, you know, are comparables?
Yeah, they'd be comparables to us, yeah.
And they're about one in six also?
Yeah, about one in six. I can give you some counts just, you know, on the Badger Care Plus. We have about 13,000 recipients in La Crosse. Medicaid alone, other Medicaid, about 6,000. And food share, with food stamps, about 12,000 individuals in La Crosse County. Okay. Those are the three primary benefit programs.
Thank you.
Supervisor Hampson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Legally, is the county still obligated to serve people in need when they come to the county for services that normally they would go to family care, but they've capped it?
It depends upon their status. If they're a 51 that they go through with us, we have a legal obligation to provide services to them in a least restrictive environment. People have a right to choose to enroll in family care or other self-directed programs, which we refer to as IRIS, for example, in this area. They can choose. They don't have to. And they need services, and they meet 51 requirements in terms of protection of themselves or others, then we have to serve them.
It just kind of disturbs me that we no longer have the staff to serve them because we rolled all that into family care and then let it go. And yet the county is still obliged to take new people.
Yeah, we'll take them. The question will be, will we have to serve them again? Because of prioritization, we're able to do at least for a while.
Okay. Okay.
But if this cap stays in place 1 year, 2 years, eight years, it make a big difference.
I can see
and
us
how
in big
do we,
trouble down the line.
Correct. They'll get much greater. 1 month only so far, or 5 weeks about so far. So
okay.
We'll see.
Thank you. Supervisor Ebert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When you gave those numbers about the 1 and 6 and you add those up, aren't some of those people drawing both, so actually your number would decrease?
Right, but there's other benefits, too, I didn't go into that people receive. I didn't go through all those.
So it'd be 1 in 6 individuals, and some may be drawing from more than one program.
That's correct.
Thank you much, sir.
So it's an unduplicated count.
That was the numbers.
The 1 in 6.
Right, 1 in 6 be unduplicated. So family care, we've talked about that. You've heard that. Again, we don't know the impact. We're hoping it could be zero. It could be easily $1 million a year based upon some preliminary data that we've taken a look at earlier on, and we'll wait and see what that is. And then how do we serve them with the staff that we no longer have, or do we end up contracting with it with some other entity or business? We don't know yet, but we'll wait and see. Transition to a regional income maintenance administration model. That's effective January 1, 2012, that we're expected to have a regional entity provide income maintenance services to our residents and residents probably at least within 7 other partner counties that will be hopefully with us in a consortium to provide those services. We don't really know the impact yet. We're currently developing the business model as well as the service models. We're trying like crazy to put together those models, because all of you and ourselves need to know what that's going to be and get the people and the services in place by January. It's no small undertaking. It's almost like developing a new business in a matter of a couple of months that we need to put together for the recipients of our 8-county consortium. So lots of risk with that. Again, we'll try to make it work out and provide the services we intend to provide, but I can't tell you today what the cost will be and if we'll stay within the budget that we're developing in this very brief period of time.
Can I do a trick question for you? Can you just tell us the 8 counties that are in that income maintenance region?
Yeah, it's the same 8 counties as we're in our family care consortium and the same 8 counties that were in our ES chain center pilot process for economic support. They're La Crosse, Monroe, Vernon, Jackson, Pepin, Clark.
Trempealeau.
Pepin.
Trempealeau.
Buffalo, Trempealeau.
Buffalo.
Maybe I named them twice.
No, you got it. Thank
you. Use my fingers, I guess.
Supervisor Sobranek.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. When you mentioned Rock County, it brings to mind what Innovators La Crosse County is. Rock County, they implemented their program directly based on what we did in La Crosse County. So a lot of different counties looked to La Crosse County for guidance, and I thank you, gentlemen, for leading us. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Then one more slide.
Okay, so just the summary we see with for the state budget, we know we have the 89,000 impact when all said and done. The unplanned balances out to the 182. The risks at this time, we can only say that they're significant. So what we're looking at in terms of preliminary planning deficit, which is also significant, is $271,000 that we begin our budget planning cycle that we'll have to make up somehow if we're going to continue services at the current level. And again, we're going to try to do that through multiple strategies, being proactive and working our head to position ourselves for change. We've done that in the past with family care. We've done that with the call center that was alluded to that put us in a very strong position for income maintenance regionalization. We're looking at that in terms of sharing resources. We can no longer have the luxury of a time where we have those 5 separate service sections just operating independently of each other. We're really one department with shared services, with a holistic outlook in terms of our clients, doing what we can to rapidly address their needs and being able to stand them up self-sufficiently again. Sharing services amongst our community partners is as well. There may be a client that may not be at yet the level to for our services, but to make a seamless transition to a community service so they won't rise to the level of need of our service. To have better seamless transitions and sharing across the community is a priority for us, and sharing services across other counties as well, like we're doing with our IM regionalization approach, and making sure that all of our funds are really being driven to areas in practices that have been proven to get good results. So we've done a lot in just this year in terms of outcome-based contracts and dean staff, and what we're doing and really holding ourselves accountable in terms of what we're funding in terms of practices, to making sure we're only funding things that have been shown to get good results. So with all of those and other strategies, we're really hoping to maintain services at a level that can meet the big need that we'll continue to have. So thanks for your interest, and that's the outlook as we see it for 2012 so far.
Thank you both, as well as Mr. O'Malley. Just a reminder that as we launch the budget discussion tonight, even though staff have been busy at it earlier, just a reminder that this begins the opportunity for each of us individually to have those great ideas of how to save the county millions of dollars, have those conversations with Mr. O'Malley. Maybe it's the Don Bina of a new philosophy or new policy, but those hallway conversations now is the time to start having them so that staff can start working on them and crunching the numbers and proving that, in fact, it will save the county millions of dollars or some number other than that. But that each of us has an opportunity and a responsibility to be doing that work early so that there are not whatever the baseball analogy is, you know, the last inning kind of rushing around crunching numbers with some great idea to save us from deficit or something like that. So we each have an obligation to do that, and I know that Mr. O'Malley in previous years has pleaded with us to do that early, and I'm encouraging us to do that as well, that's part of our responsibility in this process. Any other questions from either of the presentations? No? Is everybody still with us here? acknowledgement cards and correspondence are on the billboard or bulletin board on the back. And any suggestions for future agenda items? Supervisor Benrod.
Thank you. I just wanted to let people know that if I wanted to bring the picnic up again, because they can always pay me or send me a check or see Jenny, just so we can kind of get a count. So if they couldn't pay me tonight or whenever, they can pay at the picnic, just so we get how many people are coming. I would appreciate it. And thank you, Jenny, for your help.
Any other future agenda items? If not, Supervisor Sobranek.
Thank you. I'd like to give you my top 10 reasons why I never procrastinate. But I see everybody here is anxious to adjourn. Maybe we can do this next time. So I move to adjourn.
Moved by Supervisor Sobranek, seconded by Supervisor Brockmiller. All those in favor of adjournment signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. We are adjourned.